You cannot be posting about your auditions. You can only post after you've done the job and gotten the approval from the producer or the director.
Yeah.
You cannot be posting about your auditions. It's just nobody's business.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Confessions of an Actress podcast. I'm your host, Meredith Patterson, and I am so excited that I have my first casting director, and that it is Jen Rudin, who is incredible. She is an award-winning casting director, a writer, an audition coach, and she is the author of the book Confessions of a Casting Director. So this is a match made in heaven, you guys. But Jen is also, you know, she's somebody who started as a professional actor at the age of 8. She transitioned at the age of 17, and we talk about this in the interview. She is now she now owns and operates Jen Rudin Casting, which casts for film, television, commercials, animation, and theater in New York and Los Angeles. She also writes a monthly column for Backstage.com on voiceover casting. She is just amazing. So I am just so happy that she said yes to talking to me and having a conversation. And I really hope you guys take notes with this interview, because she's just amazing. She really gives some great information. And for somebody like me who's been in the industry for 20 years, there was a few things where I was like, oh my God, I should be doing more of that. So take notes, sit back, relax, and enjoy this incredible conversation with the amazing casting director, producer, author, just woman extraordinaire, Jen Rudin. You are, Jen, you're the first casting director that I've had on. So,
oh boy.
I'm actually really excited about it, because it's sort of, you know, but although you've been on both sides of the table, if you will,
yes.
Which I think is so fascinating as well. But yeah, you're the first casting director. So, and you also have, we have something in common. This is Confessions of an Actress podcast, and your book is Confessions of a Casting
yes.
Director.
Perhaps soon to be a podcast if I can sort out my schedule.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun. It would be fun to chat about our, you know, best audition stories and worst audition stories, which are sprinkled actually throughout Confessions of a Casting Director. They're in the book. There's a bunch of different fun stories, but yes, it's a great title.
it's a great brand. Yeah. I mean, and I haven't read your book, I'm sorry to say, but I know, you're going to give me some nuggets of information from the book. And of course, you know, it sounds like a book that I would just, you know, completely absorb, in
yes.
an afternoon, you know, or I don't know how long it is, but I'm sure,
you know, it's a fun paperback, and I always tell people to buy the paperback and not to read it on the Kindle, because it's definitely the type of book that you want to earmark and underline and highlight and bring with you on the train, or, you know,
yeah,
to your
absolutely.
Auditions and refer to. And it's kind of like, it sounds like I'm dishing on like the craziest, you know, casting couch stories, but it's really divided into different chapters with, you know, auditioning for film and TV, and then the whole technology chapter, and my favorite, one of my favorites, which is LA versus New York, navigating the freeways versus subways and those differences.
Or the Sharks versus the Jets is what I like to call it.
Yeah, it's, you know, that was my favorite one to write, so much that the editor kept saying, like, you're talking a lot about the traffic in LA. And I said to her, yes, it's a huge part of Los Angeles. So yes, I keep repeating about the traffic.
Yeah. Having been an actor in LA, and I'm in LA right now, but I was in New York for 18 years, mm-hmm. and I lived on the Upper West Side. And so the A train was always like, I had to give myself time from door to door and
yeah.
negotiate, whether you're negotiating with the people in the subway or the people on the 405 or wherever you're going. It is part of your, you know, process. And
yes, yes.
And I know that you're big on being, the one thing that I've found in researching you and talking about Confessions of a Casting Director, the book, is the one thing that you say over and over again, which I am a big believer of, is being professional when you go to your audition, preparing mm-hmm. for your audition, and all of that. So talk a little bit about that, because I hope that people are. I mean, you would know more
than
me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's really like, it's not, we always say it's not brain surgery. And the reason why I started writing the book was because I was at Disney for 7 years. And
yeah.
on one of my trips working for Tom Schumacher in the Broadway division, I was around the country in 10 different cities trying to find the new Ariel for Little Mermaid on Broadway.
Yeah.
And there were so many things I saw these 600 women who came in on our open calls do wrong. And I thought, boy, if I could just give them a little advice, a couple of tips, which I don't have time to do right now.
Yeah, no, of course.
They would be, their auditions would go so much better. So it's just a couple of, it's really basic things. You know, if I'm calling myself a professional casting director and you're calling yourself a professional actor, then that means, you know, being early, being prompt, not bringing your literal and physical baggage into the room with you, not complaining about the subway or the traffic, because we all had to take the subway or drive our car.
Exactly.
Or, you know, sit in Lyft traffic. So just, you know, little basic things like, you know, it's a job interview. And unfortunately for actors, you know, there's multiple job interviews a week, sometimes in one day, but really important to think about first impressions and being a professional. And, you know, for child actors, if they mess up a line or they have a really off day, I'm always going to see them again because they're kids and they grow. But with adults, you know, you really do have one chance to make a good first impression. And so you have to really put your best foot forward, as Mary Poppins likes to say, and really, you know, use every audition as it's a job opportunity and a time to connect with the casting office, whether or not you're going to get the role, and be a professional and, you know, have your life together as best you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, get your nerves under control. I know I've botched a few auditions myself. Just because of nerves and just mm-hmm. because of having like multiple auditions in a day and just being a little flustered and letting it get to me. And in my 20s was when I was auditioning way more. I mean, I remember having like 5 auditions a day doing pilot season out here in LA and just trying to navigate all of that. And, you know, obviously the casting directors for me have always been such a huge champion of actors that they want you to do well.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to be the person, right? It makes your job easier.
Yeah, I mean, there's this real misconception that, you know, we're the gatekeepers and, you know, we're these tough people. But the truth is we form relationships with actors. We depend on you guys to make our sessions great. We want to cast you, whether it's today or next week or 2 years from now. And so, you know, the relationships with the casting directors are so important, going back to being on time, which is why we need to have you, you know, showing up on time to our session. And, you know, we understand that there are so many auditions that you're going on, but if we are scheduling an in-person audition, you know, you just kind of have to do your best to be prepared with all those pages, even though it can be crazy, 13 pages for pilot season for one role that you get at 9:30 at night and you have to go in at 9 the next morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It's what it's like. And it's just that, you know, sink or swim, hit, you know, you're either got nothing going on or you have everything going on.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's tough. It's a hard business.
But it's a business that, like, you know, you have to know. I had somebody ask me once if I was paid to audition, and I was like, mm-hmm. ha, wouldn't that be nice? But no, it's not something you do have to be prepared for the financial part of it as well, the sacrifice of it. You know, like if you're doing pilot season, which has changed so much over the years in terms of it being just like because there's so much content now. I feel like it's like pilot season's like year round. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I used to call it the beast. That's what I called it because I came from New York theater and then came out to LA to do pilot season. And I was like testing in the first week. And I was like, what is this? I don't even know what's happening.
Yeah, I call it like pilot season panic is the chapter in Confessions of a Casting Director. There's
That's
also
good.
A chapter about the initial investment, you know, because it does cost money to be an actor and nobody does pay you for your auditions, at least not, you know, not for the first round. Maybe they pay for a paid callback or a recording session. Yeah, you've got to figure out the budget. And also what's really tough for actors, I think, is like if we give you an audition time for 4:20, unless you're, you know, fancy or Natalie Portman, who's doesn't audition anymore, like you've got to do everything you can to show up at 4:10.
Absolutely.
On that audition. And that's really hard for actors. You can't keep, you know, changing the times because we have a schedule too. So you have to make sure that you have a job that if you have a supporting job, that it allows you to be, really have flexibility.
And that juggle for you guys, I mean, I think about casting, you know, I'm I have a good relationship with a few casting directors who I've known forever. And I'll just talk about like the end of pilot season and how, you know, this is back in the day when there was like a break for them. Like I felt like, you know, you've cast all your projects and now you're like, you're just exhausted. Like you think about the actors have, you know, a certain amount of bandwidth that they have to go through during that time or just in, you know, just trying to cast a project. I feel like the casting directors just, you guys just never get a break.
Yeah. I mean, I used to always get bronchitis at the end of every pilot season. And a lot of that was because there were 60 actors a day for 5 different pilots. And so, you know, that's another reason why it's like really important not to shake hands with the casting director unless they take their hand out. But I always kind of was pretty run down by the end because you're trying constantly to keep up and, you know, genders are changing, the roles are changing, you're posting to LA, you know, you're in New York doing auditions. LA calls you, they want to test somebody, get them on an airplane. You have to stop everything you're doing. You know, it's really a grind. But as we always used to say at Disney, you know, it only takes one. And so if one person tests, if one person books the role, if one person, you know, goes out and flies, if one person gets it, then all the hard work we've done in New York is, you know, is all for good.
And that's so funny because that's one of the things that a lot of actors say. I know that like my agent and manager used to say to me, like the hustle, you're going around and doing your auditions and stuff. And it just takes one job that really can propel you to the next level or whatever it is. And I think that that's a good thing to keep in mind that it's a collaborative art that like if you, you know, if you do have as an actor, a lot of times actors think that they're the center of the universe, that everything is about them. And I'm like, well, you're the person who's on the other side of the camera or you're the person who is center stage, but it's a collaborative art and there's a domino effect if you aren't somebody who's coming, you know, to the set on time or your audition on time or your, you know, whatever. And I think that the more people know that, like going into the industry or even if you've been in the industry for a long time, like the more that you know that it is a collaborative art, the better. At least that's what I find.
Yeah. I mean, it's all pieces of the puzzle, you know, and then casting, we're constantly trying to, you know, to populate the world to find the best person for this role. And it is putting pieces of the puzzle together. And, you know, sometimes it does come down to, you know, do they look like a family or, you know, how, for me, certainly with all the animation I do, it's, you know, do these voices, if they're going to be in a scene, if the dog and cat are talking in the scene together, I just want to make sure that my voices sound distinct and different. So a lot of it is mixing and matching, which really has nothing to do with you, the actor. You know, there's so few things that an actor can control. And I talk about this at length in the book. You know, you can't control the traffic. You can't control the subway. You can't control the weather. But the things you can control are, you know, looking your best, going to dry bar if you need to, have a clean, you know, hairstyle for your audition, ironing your clothing, learning your lines. Like these are the things you can control. So as much that an actor can do that, I think you're going to have more successful auditions. And then let all that other stuff go. Let go how long you had to sit in the waiting room or, you know, what happened on the 405. Because that's the stuff that, you know, you're going to drive yourself crazy over.
Oh my God, absolutely. And you don't want to bring that into the room. And, you know, all of that stuff is just, we all, like you said before, we all have to deal with our own things that are happening in our lives and just, you know, be a professional and let's get the job done. Going back to like feedback, do you usually give feedback to people? Because I know some actors really want it. It's like, they want to know why they didn't get it. And it's like, sometimes it's such a small thing, right?
It's hard, you know, sometimes managers will email me for feedback. And, you know, if I have some time at the end of the session or 2 days later or 6 weeks later, I'll get back to them. But most of the time, you know, unless it's a manager that I'm friends with who I know really well, you know, most of the time I usually say like, I can't give you feedback till pilot season's over or, you know, or I just don't know right now what's going on or it just wasn't, you know, I did give feedback. I just recently cast a lovely short film and one of the actresses had come into one of my Actors Connection voiceover seminars and I brought her in for this movie and I wrote to her and I said, you know, you gave a beautiful audition And it's just about trying to mix and match the little boy for the son.
Yeah.
And so I said, it's either going to be, you know, you're redhead and there's another choice that's brunette. And at the end of the day, ultimately, we went with a dark haired boy. So we went with the brunette actress. But she was so appreciative of the feedback. But that's just because I had like a little time and I wanted to write to her and, you know, yeah, but I don't have time to do that most of the time.
Oh my God. I don't know how you would have time to do that at all. But like, I find that when casting directors are able to do that and it's something that is, you know, I don't know, for me, like if it's out of your control, like, you know, hair color or something like, you know, you don't have enough social media followers or whatever the, you know, the tiny thing is, or the big thing, like I find that it's so commendable, and it's another example of casting directors wanting to protect the actor or help the actor with the rejection. But you know, actors are going to get rejection. You're going to get rejection all the time. You have to just get over that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to just, you know, listen, I go on a lot of meetings and a lot of projects I really want to get hired on, and I too have to deal with it. And so I, you know, I always says my have a very good friend that just says, you know, you've just sort of let it all go to the big white balloon in the sky. You know, yeah. You just have to let it go. And some are hard to let go. That's one of the reasons why I had so much trouble as a child actor. I just laid in bed at night praying that I would get the part. And it's like, why is God going to listen to me? Like for my, just when I speak to God about auditions, like why, you know, like why should that be, you know, the time I get my prayers answered?
That's hard. You're like, it's very true. And I know you started out as a child actor at the age of 8 and mm-hmm. from like 8 to like 17, right?
Yeah.
Which are such formidable years. And yeah. You know, I was not in the business really then in my life, and I wanted to be so badly. But I know that my friends who have been child actors, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit, they found that it did burn them out in terms of the hustle and the bustle and the rejection of the industry.
Yes, I totally agree. I honestly, like, I tested for Growing Pains, the Tracy Gold show that just went on for 7 seasons. And I have to tell you, not getting Growing Pains at age 12, that rejection, nothing, not getting into Wesleyan Early Decision, nothing will match that rejection, you know? And I've had, you know, I got laid off. I've been divorced. I, you know, I had a home with my ex-husband. Like, I've been through a lot of like really tough, competitive, horrible stuff, but mm-hmm. nothing will surpass what that felt like at 12. Because what happens is the possibility and the promise of these auditions, which I talk about at length in the book, you go on these auditions and you just don't know. I mean, if you get it, there's $5,000, you know, there's money and there's fame and there's the cover of People magazine and all these things.
Yeah.
And then if you don't and you're 12, it's just really, it was really tough. So I found that actually a lot of my child actor friends from my years auditioning in New York and LA and my friends from Stage Door Manor, my theater camp, many of us have stayed in the business just in different capacities, whether producing, writing, directing, casting. Some of us have stayed in the business and found other ways to feel fulfilled. But yeah, it's really tough. And, you know, I didn't get Growing Pains. And so every time it was like it aired every week, it was like, you know, my mother would say, so that could have been you. But then, you know, Tracy Gold had a lot of hardship. You know, she was like, drank a lot and had an eating disorder and, you know, all these things because you have so much pressure on you. So it's almost probably better I didn't get it and went to college and had a normal life.
A normal life. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I auditioned and got pretty close to Grey's Anatomy. So I kind of had that same feeling. And then a lot of people knew, including my sister. She used to be, you know, we watched the movie Can't Buy Me Love. Do you remember that movie? Patrick Dempsey. And I remember telling her, oh my God, I'm testing for this show that's, you know, with the guy from Can't Buy Me Love. Do you remember him? Like we were talking about. And then so sometimes it's hard when people know that you didn't get something that became huge because then they don't know that and this is just people in the general public, they don't know the pain that might be revisited by bringing that up again.
Yeah.
But for me, it was very different being in my 20s as opposed to, you know, a formidable year like being 12 years old.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I think what's so great about the fact that you transitioned into being a casting director is that you're still in the business. I mean, you're not just a casting director. We're going to get to that because you do so much. But I think it's so great because you have been on that side of the audition side and the acting side and the rejection side, and you're still in it as opposed to being like bitter and just, you know,
yeah,
I don't know.
I've been called like casting director for the people. It's like yoga for the people. You know, it's sort of, and yes. Also I've been also called, you know, like pleasant but firm. It's like, I care about people.
Yes.
So I'm always going to say, hi, how are you? And be compassionate. But at the same time, you know, we don't have 25 minutes to chat before the audition. And I do have another one of my favorite chapters of Confessions of a Casting Director is the politics of the waiting room, because that can be very toxic. And I'm the worst because I'm the first person to be like, my God, Meredith, how are you? You look so great. I love you. Your hair looks so good. And of course we have to be careful now in the Me Too era to not, you know, make those compliments or assumptions or observations about people. But, you know, the waiting room can be so toxic. I had a very toxic experience when I was 12 where somebody sort of distracted me and tricked me. And, you know, I went in and blew the audition. And so I am very careful with people. I watch them in the waiting room, and you know, you can walk into the waiting room and have your whole life in order, and then you run into somebody mm-hmm. and there's nothing another actor is going to say to you at that moment that's going to make you feel better, because they mm-hmm. either have a better agent or they just got engaged or they just, you know.
Oh my God. And it's comparison is death. And there actually are people, and I've had this happen to me numerous times, especially when it gets down to the wire in testing, a lot of the testing that I've done in pilot season, like most of the people that I got down to the wire with were gracious and lovely and lovely. And there was not a lot of toxicity, but there can be in the waiting room. And it's so good that you mentioned that in your book, because you have to protect yourself. You have to be friendly and nice, but you have to protect yourself in your audition.
Well, also it's like, we're social people, you know? So when you run into somebody, you know, I always say, it's great to see you. Let's meet up at Starbucks when we're both done. I need to get my head back in my script, but we can't sort of help it, you know? So sometimes it's not like, we don't know that we're consciously doing it, but we distract. And when my book came out, HarperCollins made a bunch of fun videos, and they're all on my website. And it's one of them is the waiting room. And it's like, you know, we just have to be careful. And yet at the same time, I'm not saying you should be a monk and listen to your headphones and not talk to anybody, but you have to be ready that at any moment we are ready for you to come into the room.
Yes.
So, you know, when you sign in, you needed to have already gone to the bathroom and brushed your hair and done like last looks on your lips and stuff.
Yeah.
Because we're ready for you, or you're stuck sitting there for 20 minutes and then you have to figure out, how can I conserve my energy when, you know, I am sitting here now for a little bit of time. So it's always different. Every day is different depending on what's happening. And I try to keep my actors moving. I really do. But things happen, you know, you get stuck. And, you know, you put in a lunch break from 1 to 2 and, you know, it's 1:50 and I'm shoving food in my mouth because we have to start up at 2:00. It's hard. It's like having a store.
I remember Adrian Stern in New York. I was auditioning for something and I had to be this really intense scene. And she, you know, I'd auditioned for her many times and she was like, I'm so sorry. I'm eating in front of, like, she had to like apologize. And I was like, Adrian, I was okay. So like, I, you know, being a theater actor, like I'm used to kind of, you know, compartmentalizing what someone's doing behind the camera, but she was so hungry. I remember being like, I'm so hungry. Like, it's okay.
But I
get it. We're all human. Yeah. We have to juggle 1,000 things to make, you know, make your day work.
Yeah. I always apologize if I'm eating, cause I, it's so rude. And yet at the same time, if I don't, then I'm not going to make it through the day. You know?
Yeah. What do you talk in your book about nerves, about people being like actors being nervous and how to, I don't know, cause I know it's different for everybody, but some people are just debilitated by it.
You know, I think, Well, Lana Levine, in her amazing podcast, Little Known Facts, always says, like, she feels like she's at the audition and, like, she feels like she's, like, or I don't want to misquote her, but something like, you know, like, a bear is, like you're not being attacked by a bear, you know? It's to try to keep the perspective. But what's really hard is that our attention spans are so much more limited than they were back in the 80s and 90s. And so... Mm-hmm. Fortunately, now you have to walk into that audition and pretty much give a performance. It used to be that you'd have the audition, the casting directors would, move you forward to endorse you for the next round. Now it's like everything is so fast and crazy that if you look down at your pages, you know, if you drop out of the scene, like they're going to go on and watch the next audition. And that's really sad. So it just puts all the more pressure on people. But I've been thinking a lot, you know, I do a lot of audition coaching and career coaching, and I talk to a lot of parents who have, you know, young actors auditioning. And it's oftentimes, you know, the parents, again, a big chapter in the book is the stage moms chapter, but they have a lot of anxiety and nerves around it too. And it's kind of like, how could you not? You're putting your child in a room with strangers. But I think for actors, every actor's got to be different. You know, journaling is so important, and gratitude journals and 5-minute journals and all these different things to just try to get all that stuff out. To just, I've been a journal keeper since I was 6. So for me, it's like, you know, write about it, you know, let it go into the balloon in the sky and get it down on paper. And then you have to move on.
Yeah. You must, because you made a good point about like planning something after an audition, like meeting a friend at Starbucks after an audition. Like I've always said that, go do something, have something planned and have a life outside of the business. Like don't talk about it 24/7 because it's just, you know, it's exhausting. It's mentally exhausting. And you're right. You start to just obsess about it. And then, you know, you're going to watch the TV show Growing Pains or Grey's Anatomy or whatever is happening. And you're going to watch it and you're going to see all of this stuff that you quote unquote didn't get. But I think it's like George Clooney who said, like, the part wasn't yours to begin with. Think of the audition as a chance to perform.
That's a great, that's true. So totally hilarious.
It's hard to do that though.
No, but last week I was flying home from LA and it was like a later afternoon flight, and I'm on American Airlines and I'm scrolling through trying to keep myself awake.
Yeah.
And there is Growing Pains on, you know, American Airlines. So I watched a couple of episodes and I went back in time a little bit, and you know, the truth is I watched them and I landed and went home to my husband and life went on.
Yeah.
So that being said, it's really important to have some stability. You know, Joan Lynn is a wonderfully delightful casting director in New York, a lot of commercials. And I freelanced for her before I went to Disney in 2002.
Yeah.
When I told her I was moving to LA to go work for Disney, she said to me, marry a dentist. And I remember laughing and saying, what do you mean? And she said, marry a dentist, marry somebody who has a job, who is like a civilian. Don't, you know, just somebody normal. And so, you know, I just remember that because her point was you want to go home every night and just have some stability in your life. And if you are, you know, don't have that, then you are going to go spiral out of control and sort of self-doubt and go down a dark road. And social media, believe me, is the worst.
It's the worst for that because, you know, already we're doing comparison is death. And then now you have the scrolling and you know, we're also told as actors, like we should have social media, have a following and all that stuff. And, you know, a lot of the high level things that I did was like post social media. So I didn't have I actually wanted to talk about that a little bit in terms of A, your mental health in terms of being on social media, but B, like the impact of that with casting in the business and like, what do actors, I don't know, like what do they
do? My technology chapter in Confessions is called Don't Tweet Us, We'll Tweet You. And that's
which is awesome.
My wonderful friend, Ari Carpel, who was a longtime entertainment journalist, came up with that title. Nice. So I can't take credit for it. But, you know, here's the thing, you know, so social media equals compare plus despair. For me, anyway, every time I log on to Facebook, there's some deadline announcement and there's just some stuff. And, you know, in addition to like the dogs and the kids and the Halloween costumes, there's the whole entertainment aspect, which is people posting their good news. Yeah. So my feeling is what really bothers me about social media is when people post like, had an amazing call back at Blue Bloods with Tom Selleck. It's like, no, 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 no. You cannot be posting about your auditions. You can only post after you've done the job and gotten the approval from the producer or the director.
Yeah.
You cannot be posting about your auditions. It's just nobody's business. So I think you have to be really careful on social media because I hate when I see like, had an amazing audition, fingers crossed, hashtag, you know, prayer emoji or whatever. And it's like, no, 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 you know. So if people have gotten fired. You know, I talk about in the book how an actor put what he thought was an innocent Facebook update saying like, finally got a commercial audition. Nice to see my agents finally get me in. Now he meant it as a ha ha ha.
Right.
You know, I'm so excited. Well, the president of the agency saw that and picked up the phone and called him and said, we are no longer representing you. And he said, but I just, and it's almost like sexual harassment training at Disney. Like, it doesn't matter what the impact, it doesn't matter what the intention was, it's the impact.
Absolutely.
So we were taught, like, if I say, like, you look like you lost 10 pounds, you look amazing. My intention is to give you a compliment that you lost some weight, but the impact could be that I was implying that you were overweight before. So it's the same thing. And actors have to be so careful.
Oh my God. I feel like they need training on this. Like actors, I feel like, especially like my generation who it's been introduced while we already have been in the business for 10, 12 years or whatever. Like it's something that people are like, oh, maybe, you know, I've signed social media, you know, clauses where I'm not allowed to post things where I've been doing stuff and things like that. But that is so, it's such important advice that you just gave about posting about your auditions. Cause I think people, and I don't know, who knows, maybe they're trying to boast for their own ego or whatever, but maybe they're trying to drum up followers and stuff like that. That's just me being devil's advocate. But like, that's a really good point about like just keeping it under wraps until you've maybe booked
it. Yeah, it's really not anybody's business. I mean, I think somebody like once posted that she was going to be in Wicked and they hadn't done the contract work yet. And so
oh, yeah.
I think they pulled the offer. So just have to be really careful. And I have called friends on it, grown-up friends, and said, what are you doing posting about your Blue Bloods audition with Tom Selleck? First of all, it's nobody's business that he even is in New York at the callbacks. Second of all, you know, you haven't booked it yet. And third of all, your best friend is now sitting in her temp job going, why didn't I have that audition for Blue Bloods? So it comes, I mean, we post all this stuff because we want affirmation, we want likes, we want people to think we're awesome.
Yes.
But the truth is it all, I think, really all comes out of fear, right? I'm not good enough.
Totally.
I need to keep my name out there. So for me, I have Jen Rudin Casting on Facebook, which is where we post, you know, different things we're casting or workshops I'm teaching or stuff about the book. And then in terms of Instagram, it's kind of a mishmash. I'm sort of on Instagram because of all the young actors I work with, but I don't like, I post photos of stuff I've cooked or, you know, pictures of me in my Arctic, you know, jacket because it's freezing. It's really tricky. And I think it's only getting more and more complicated with social media. And certainly I'm asked all the time if we in casting are now casting because of social media numbers. And, you know, I always say numbers can't replace talent. But then again, I came up through, you know, Meg Simon and Marsha Schulman and Donna Morong. These are casting directors that, you know, go back to the 80s.
Yeah, and absolutely.
So it's really, it's part of a much longer conversation.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's a whole nother podcast in itself, podcast episode. But I mean, it, social media, like I think there should be some sort of training for actors on, you know, conduct. And I don't know where that comes from, the manager, the agent or whatever, but yeah, you made some really, really good points. Just really, really quickly, I want to talk about your writing because I was looking at, I was like, I know you as a casting director, child actress, coach, which I think is amazing. But also now you have Purple Glasses Productions, which
sure do.
Your mission statement, from what I read, is seeks to nurture female writers, directors, and producers to develop projects with a focus on female character-driven stories, which I love so much. I just love that that is your, that is what, you know, I mean, it launched in 2016, correct?
Yeah, it did. It did. So what happened is I wrote Confessions of a Casting Director and then wrote a Parenthood spec. That's my favorite TV show of all time.
Yeah.
I think if anybody wants to see amazing 1 hour acting, to just check out Peter Krause and, you know, Mae Whitman and Dax Shepard on that show.
Yeah.
Lauren Graham, of course, from Gilmore Girls. So anyway, I did. I went to NYU and got my MFA in dramatic writing while still casting.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Really interesting to do that in your 40s and be with a lot of millennials on, you know, Instagram when Christopher Durang is talking to the class.
Oh my God.
Don't get me started. And Ben Brantley. But anyway.
Wow.
So yeah, I had some real success out of the gate. My project Lucy in the Sky, about a teen girl with autism going back to mainstream high school, won a Sloan Award, a writing yes. award, and a Will and Jada Smith Award. And we made a short film starring Whoopi Goldberg and yeah. Danny Burstein that's been at the festival. So yeah, I'm sort of doing both. I do think this is certainly, I mean, listen, I was writing, thinking about women as the center of the story long before we got into this new period in history.
Yeah.
The same way that I was always doing diversity casting before we got into the diversity casting moment. So yeah, I've got two companies and lots of three websites, and you know, I do it all myself because I learned how and can. So yeah, so Lucy's actually making it's sort of, 2019 was the year of the film festivals. We were at like 20 of them.
Oh my
God. Actually had to stop going because it just, you know, it's expensive. Sometimes they put you up for a night, sometimes they don't. Whoopi Goldberg is an act, you know, I know her through my animation casting. So she came on board. She was actually the first actor to be cast. She plays Lucy's acting teacher at the high school. And then from there, Catherine Curtin, Danny Burstein, Kelly Hu, and then some, Zoe Coletti, who
nice.
Plays Lucy. And she's, you know, really on the rise with Scary Stories to Tell and Skin. And then Quinn McCoggan. These are child actors I've known since they were really little, who were at the perfect age to be in our movie. And
yeah.
Isabella Russo from School of Rock, the original cast. So it was really a joy. But I have to say, you know, producing a film and raising the money and becoming executive producer, I learned things you just don't know when you're in casting. You maybe go to the set and visit when you're the casting director, but when you're producing it, it's like, oof, that was some, you know, some real padding the budget, because things happen.
Yeah. But you're getting, I mean, what's amazing is that, like, you're on all sides of the industry now. You know, it's like
yeah.
you've, as a casting director, you work with the directors, you work with producers, and then to be a producer, and then also to then write, although, you know, have you always wanted to be a writer? Is that something you've always wanted?
You know, I always was, and I, you know, wrote plays as a kid and journaled and all this stuff. And unfortunately, in my 20s, I never pursued. I had some one-acts go up in New York in the early 90s, and I just never pursued it because I got really busy. I was working at Innovative Artists as an assistant, and then I went straight to work for Susan Shopmaker and then Ensemble Studio Theater and then out to LA. So I never really let myself have the time. And so
yeah.
So I think, you know, when my book came out, it was really exciting because HarperCollins trusted me to do the writing. They didn't make me hire a ghostwriter.
Oh,
and so
nice.
There I was back in the library working on my book and realized, you know, oh, I really do enjoy writing. I just haven't really done it because I've been so busy with all the other stuff. And casting is a really, really, really busy job. And I don't think people quite realize how busy it is, you know,
yeah.
avail checks and status reports and uploading. It's a lot of work. And so, so we'll see what happens in 2020. We will see. I, you know, certainly, love casting, but I'm extremely selective about what I choose to do these days, just because, I can't come on to everyone's indie film anymore, and help them attach a lead. Unless it's an absolutely perfect script or something that Purple Glasses wants to get involved with, I just can't. But yeah. I also enjoy doing a short film for, you know, emerging filmmakers out of NYU if it's good. So I kind of make my own schedule.
Yeah. Do you ultimately want to do just be a producer, or do you want to ultimately like phase out of casting, or?
That's a big question for
for the end.
Yeah, I don't really, I'm not really sure. You know, my passions in casting are animation and young talent. Those are my two favorite areas of expertise. And I've always enjoyed kids casting. I've always been the person in New York that people will call for these searches sometimes. And I just, you know, I love to work with the kids. And believe me, there are so many casting directors that just don't want to do the kids casting.
It's so great that because you've been there. That's what makes you so special to that specific part of casting.
The problem with kids casting, the chaos is that, you know, kids come with strollers and moms and runny noses and, you know, the stomach flu and like all this stuff. And so sometimes one actor comes with, you know, I think the agents now say, you know, don't just come with your guardian or your parent, don't bring everybody, but it can be very chaotic. And of course, fortunately, kids casting for me anyway only happens in the afternoon after school. So I don't want to pull anybody out. So then suddenly you've got these really busy afternoons with a lot of kids and, you know, it's a lot. So I worked on Frankenweenie for Tim Burton right after I left Disney. They called me immediately with this freelance project. And I mean, we were seeing, you know, 35 kids a day. And even though it was an animated movie, Tim Burton wanted to see the kids like in a live action setting and microphones, and it was a lot. I was now, this is 10 years later, knowing what I know and how to properly staff a project. I was like drowning, you know, the first, you know, night you're uploading, you're like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. It's fun, you know. The best part is when you get to call with offers. That's the best part of the job.
And you're so good at it. I mean, it really is, you know, I know that it's all encompassing. Like every casting director that I know, whether it's Broadway or whatever, like they all just are just running on, you know, spinning a bunch of plates at once and trying to do it all. But there is just such love behind it. And, you know, sometimes that's why I was wondering, because sometimes you do get exhausted and then you do find other avenues, producing and writing and things like that, that are still as awesome and creative. But I hope you don't stop casting, because I think you're great.
No, I certainly won't. And I'm now suddenly back in like the live action film world, which just happens. And, you know, it's always fun. And, you know, the most, you know, I'm such a broken record. It's like I get on the phone with a new young director, producer, and the first thing I say is, great, and have you begun your SAG production ID work? Have you started to connect with the union? Because, you know, you need to get this paperwork in order. And so it's like, sorry to, you know, we can't start talking about casting until you get that stuff sorted out. And, you know, that's just the nitty gritty. And so I end up, the reason why so many casting directors become producers is because they're basically half the time helping people figure out what to do, what kind of contract, how do I do it, who do I talk to at SAG, you know. And it's like, so that's why so many casting directors end up taking associate producer credits or producer credits, because we are guiding them through, you know, this is how many hours you can work with the young actor, this is, you know, this is the best contract you should do it under, this is, you have to have your payroll in. And so ultimately at the end of the day, many, like I think Adrienne and certainly Alexa Fogel and you know, so many casting directors in LA end up producing, because we're smart and we can multitask. And you're also you're also psychiatrist, mommy. You know, I had one project with a very famous director who stopped talking to his producer, you know, midway through. So I had him on one line and her on the other line. And I'm basically mediating, you know, so that we can come to a conclusion and get people to the set on Monday. And that's where those sort of diplomacy therapy skills kind of come in handy, because you're really managing a lot of egos and you're basically a hired consultant to the project. So you have to make sure everyone's happy. And that is, you know, easier said than done.
I really feel like the casting director's job, a lot of people, at least before the movie or the documentary Casting By came out, like a lot of people weren't sure, like, what does a casting director do? Or at least people who are not in the industry would ask what that was. And it's like, you're the glue. You're really the glue that kind of connects everybody. And like you said, is like a therapist consultant. And, you know, I have such respect for casting directors and what they have to do and what they have to negotiate and the way that, you know, you have to take on a lot. You take on a lot emotionally, physically, and all of it.
Yeah, we do. And also we can't shove our opinion. You know, my sort of secret is like, even though like with The Princess and the Frog, I knew that it, which I detail in the casting process in the animation chapter in my book, but I knew, and Anika Noni Rose was the very first actor I brought in for the team. And I knew that she had the singing skills, the acting skills, and the, she, I knew she was the very, very, very best actress for this role. But if you shove your opinion at your producer, they're going to be like, "Ooh, why, God, leave me alone." Because my goal is to sort of be a bartender. You know, you present the choices and let your director and producer and 25 other people at the studio feel confident with the decision that they make.
Yes.
Even though you knew what it was 6 months ago, you can't be like that because that's too pushy. So I always, you know, I was a diplomatic in kindergarten and throughout middle school, and I continue to act that way because that makes everybody happy.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to be thrown under the bus, and nobody wants to be side blinded or side, whatever the expression is.
If blindsided.
No, blindsided.
It's blindsided. Yeah. No. And it, you made such a good point because a lot of times actors can lose roles if, you know, if it, the casting director or whoever, or it could be, you know, a producer or anybody who's pushing a certain person onto everybody, and it makes it feel like, you know, well, why are you pushing this person on me? I want to make the decision. It's my, you know, my job to make the decision, or I want to make the final choice.
Right.
You can, you know, that that's an unfortunate part of the business that I know that I know has happened to me in some cases, but that is such a, you do have to be such a diplomat and, you know, thank God for, thank God for you. I mean, honestly, thank God for the people who do do that.
I mean, I think, you know, the ultimate goal is to get the role cast and move on to the next role, the next project. And so, you know, that's the goal and that's the hope. And you know, the best day is when you do get to call and make those offers. The hardest day is replacing people in an animated film or, you know, telling them it's not going any further. You know, it's very hard because we're talking about people's feelings and passion and art and being an artist. And, you know, it's a, it's very, and every day is different. I mean, I think that's the thing I always like about casting is that you can't pay, as I always say to an intern or a new assistant, you know, you can't pay for this type of entertainment. I'll share one beautiful story. I was casting Touch, the Kiefer Sutherland show for Fox, and I had to find a either a boy on the autism spectrum or, you know, a boy to play this Kiefer's son on the spectrum.
Yeah.
So I'm casting. I mean, we were just doing, Bess Pfeiffer was my associate. We were just doing marathon days in the room. And so we start taping, you know, one boy, and we did the first scene. And then I said, he was like eight. I said, "That's great. Let's do the scene again. This time, just raise your eyes up a little bit more so I can see your eyes." And he said to me, "Like how God sees."
Oh, God.
And I said, "Yes, exactly. That is beautiful."
Wow.
And we were just like, what a moment, you know, like how wonderful that that's how he could take that note and make that adjustment for him. And it was like, I'll never, you know, like that's, you know, you don't forget moments like that the same way you don't forget, you know, the tears when people are crying or, you know, the guy who came in, you know, hungover after his 40th birthday for Queen of the South. Like those are moments I don't forget me and my photographic memory. Like you just go, oh, okay.
And
wow.
That's what makes it, like you said, that's what makes this business interesting.
Yeah.
And entertaining and entertaining. Well, I really do. I know you're so busy, and I know that you have
to cook dinner.
So many things going on.
You know, I know it's like when I'm home at the home office, I've got to get my scallops cooked.
Of course. No, I appreciate you taking
husband.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, and I really just enjoyed everything that you said. And I hope that what was said is, you know, creates a ripple effect to whoever's listening and helps them in the industry. I so appreciate your time, Jen. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. We'll talk soon, okay?
Okay. Bye.
Okay, bye. If you would like to order your own copy of Confessions of a Casting Director, please go to jenrudincasting.com and get a special holiday gift signed copy of Jen's book. She'll mail it to you in time for the holiday season, but there are limited copies. But this is a perfect stocking stuffer for Hanukkah or Christmas. Order your copy at Jen Rudin Casting, and also follow her on social media at RudinJ on Twitter, Instagram, and her Facebook page. She is amazing, you guys, as you now know. And if you would like to follow us on Instagram, go to Confessions of an Actress. And please go to confessionsofanactress.com and support us. That's how I keep doing this podcast. Your donations and your support are so helpful. And also your amazing reviews on iTunes also help me. And the most important thing to remember is have vision for what you want, but be grateful for where you are right now. Okay? Have a great, great rest of your week.